Hello, listener, and welcome to yet another edition of the Zeitgeist Tapes. We just won't go away. With me, Stephen Fielding, and my colleague, Emma Burnell. I'm
hello.
Saying hello. Emma, you say hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello. Hello, listener. Hello. So, having said our hellos, we are going to, because there's an election on at the moment in which we're talking, there is an election going on in the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland and whatever else. And we thought we should maybe look at something which deals with an election, and maybe talk generally about how elections have been sort of discussed in drama, in fiction, films, whatever. And so the first thing that came to my mind anyway, I suggested it because this is something when I did a course about fictions about politics, which led to my completely overlooked book called A State of Play, which you can get for £4.96 secondhand on Amazon. I just checked.
Do you know, it's somewhat
I did
ironic,
this
Steve,
course
that we've never covered State of Play.
Oh, that, well, there's been a, yeah, it's all right. It's a bit dated now. It's a bit dated now because it was all about New Labour and corruption.
Well,
I
maybe
mean, the
it's
corruption
coming back.
Now we've got to be optimistic a little bit because we're talking, listener, in it's about week three, but it feels like week 1200 of the general election campaign. Anyway, to get back on track, yeah, I thought, why don't we talk about, there's a chapter in Charles Dickens's Pickwick Papers, which was first published as a complete book, as a novel, in 1837, although it had bits of it had appeared in a monthly journal. And I mean, when I suggested that, Emma said, "Oh no, I hate Dickens," and I completely understand. And I don't. There's Dickens, which I just find just absolutely excruciating, really. But this particular chapter deals with an election in a place called Eatanswill, which is somewhere in Norfolk, could be Liz Truss's constituency. And it's published in 1837, but it's set in the pre-1832 period. So that's before 1832, hardly anyone had a vote. There were lots of corrupt constituencies. And it was basically, if you had enough money and enough beer, you could probably get yourself a place. And there were lots of constituents who didn't even have elections. So he's looking back to a few years before Britain started on the road to democracy. And the character of Mr. Pickwick in the book, every chapter is him and his fellows going on and having an adventure. And so in this chapter, which we might provide a link to, Mr. Pickwick and his fellows come to this place called Eatanswill, completely innocent of the idea there was an election on, and they just find themselves in the midst of this fevered election campaign. And now the reason, and Emma can confirm or deny this, the reason why I would have my students read this, despite the fact they didn't really want to read anything, and particularly something written in the 19th century,
such a professor,
is because I thought this is written in the 1830s about an election set before even 1832, and yet so many of the themes are so familiar to us. So that was why I suggested that we talk about it. But Emma, what do you think?
So I absolutely agree about the themes. They're all of the things that I don't like about Dickens are represented in this chapter, has to be said. The dreadful stereotype wife is a classic Dickens trope. The fact that one of the candidates is called Slumkey is, God, so Dickens. There's a one of the things I like far more than Dickens is a thing called, I can't remember what it's called, Bleak Expectations, which was a Radio 4 comedy programme. And one of the jokes in it was that the evil character was called Gently Benevolent. And I think that just was taking the piss out of the fact that Dickens did like to do sort of nominative determination quite a lot in his writings. You know, silly characters have silly names. Evil characters are called Slumkey. Things like that. Well, I don't know if this politician's particularly evil, but he's a, both of the politicians in this are aristocrats. They both have their own houses named after them. And then they sort of go and address the masses while slagging off the masses behind their backs. But I thought that the fever pitch parts of it were very, very interesting to the modern moments. If you look at particularly post-referendum, maybe I even mean post-2014 referendum for that matter, because if this was happening in Scotland during that campaign, the two tribalist sides just screaming at each other, with no information being actually able to be imparted by anyone speaking from a platform, felt really quite modern and familiar. So yes, I absolutely see why this is a relevant chapter to be talking about and discussing now. And maybe the drunken men on the streets are now just drunken people with Twitter in their hands.
Very, very probably, yes. So this the situation in the election in Eatanswill. I mean, there's a Dickensian name for
Exactly.
yes, because everyone's got their noses in the trough, like pigs. The themes that I picked up, that or the tropes, as clever people would say, that are fairly cons that I think are very consistent with at least how with how many people see elections, and certainly how they've been depicted in subsequent fictions and dramas and TV and whatever is are I mean, the Blues and the Buffs are the two parties, obviously fictionalized parties. I mean, Whigs, Tories, but they're the same. I mean, they're very different in the sense that they attack that, but they're the same, aren't they? They're
They're exactly,
exactly the
and
same.
he very deliberately at no point outlines their policy differences, if they even have any. We will never know, because one of the things that he does, one of the things that he employs to ensure that we never know that, is that you cannot hear the speeches. And so Pickwick, who is diarising all of this, has no idea what's said from the stage, because the crowds are cheering and jeering over them the whole time.
And they're encouraged to by the opponents, so that nobody ever really hears what it's meant to be about.
So when Pickwick arrives at the town, and he arrives at the, so there are pubs that are designated blue pubs and buff pubs, and he arrives at the blue pub, but the buff, and there's a speech being made from the balcony, and lots of cheering happening in the streets. But it's quite clear that the people are cheering when they're given visual signals to cheer, because the buff people have sent a load of drummers to drown them out. Now, far be it from me to say that if something's been a trope since 1830, the number 10 comms team might have got their act together on the day that they announced their election. But that was what it immediately brought to mind. Rishi Sunak goes out to make his election speech, and all you can hear is things can only get better.
Yeah, that's kind of one of those historical accidents. But yes, so the parties are the same. And I mean, what did you think about the way that I mean, in the 1830s, before 1832, and for most of the time after 1832, in fact, most people in a town didn't have a vote, but participated in some way. You know, they providing the kind of background, the cheering, and all of that. But the ultimate kind of position that of the people that did have the vote, is they're easily swayed, or at least the majority of people are easily swayed by beer, being, you know, G'd along. But that ultimately, as we know, right at the very end of the chapter, after all of the fuss about of the election campaigning, the hustings, the whatevers, that because we are dealing with a pre-reform election, that the very small number of electors that actually have a vote have been bought off by Slumkey, and all of it. And this is something else that's maybe a theme that's persistent, and maybe one that's more persistent now than ever it was, is that all of that kind of the superficial electioneering was all meaningless, because at the very end, Slumkey went and bought the votes of those that mattered.
Slumkey bought the votes of those who mattered, and there was also a fair amount of dirty tricks to stop the voters, the other electors, those who were attached to the Buffs, from being able to turn up and into an including murder, throwing them in the canal where one person's only their hat was found,
Yes.
dosing them with laudanum so they slept through the whole thing. Yeah, I mean, Dickens is not clearly not a fan of the electoral process in its rawest elements. I mean, I think, I mean, you wrote a very, very interesting essay, which we'll link to in the show notes, about the continuous depiction of elections since, as you say, before the Great Reform Act, and right up to modern times. Politics is almost never portrayed positively. There are exceptions. The West Wing's an obvious one,
That's American, though.
which is American. Our British equivalent was The Thick of It, which is very much not portraying it positively.
Well, actually, we should, being a pedant and listener, this is all in my book, which you can get for £4.96 secondhand on Amazon. The BBC actually put out a pilot for something called The Deputy. This is during the New Labour period, which was meant to be a British West Wing, where the Deputy Prime Minister, he was a kind of John Prescott kind of a bloke.
Did he
I
thump
mean, it was
anyone?
ex it was explicitly it was explicitly meant to say that, well, politics can make a difference and people do try their best. And the pilot never got turned into a series. So it's because, well, for a reason I'm not sure about, but that says so much anyway.
Yeah,
So yeah,
I mean, it there are very few depictions, positive depictions, of politicians, and the political process on television. Maybe Party Animals is the closest because they were like interesting and nice people, but they were also all drugged up and shagging all the time.
they're trying to make it accessible to young people, so they were all drugged up and sex obsessed. Yes.
But it was, I mean, this life probably made a lot of people want to be lawyers, so maybe Party Animals made a lot of people want to be politicians, who knows? But I mean, and to be honest, in some ways, West Wing has had a more pernicious effect on the behavior of actual people in politics. You know, when I've been talking about the idiotic briefings that have been going on around the Labour Party recently, my go-to line is, "You're not fucking Josh Lyman. Stop thinking you are." But I do think there is a balance that we're just not seeing in any form of popular culture, written and right back to Dickens, of the importance of the electoral process and the vote and having a choice, and the complexities around representing 70,000 people at once and how you find that whilst not losing yourself. And I can't remember a time when that's been not overwhelmingly either the politician is driven by greed and power and is entirely wrong-un. And only if only the good people, if only the good people would run, they wouldn't be compromised.
Well, I can tell you, if clearly you've not read my book, which is just terrible. It's
I read
absolutely
your
terrible.
book when we started
Now you've
doing this
forgotten.
bloody podcast, which was like a million years ago.
Yes, but there have been positive depictions, but they seem to just drop off after the 1970s, as television producers, filmmakers are going with what they think is, this is what people think about politicians, i.e. they're all terrible, looking after themselves, blah blah blah. So let's give them something about politicians being evil and going after themselves. But to come back to the point about, because you said about the thick of it being, it's kind of an equivalent to some extent in Britain compared to the United States. But that was all about spin doctors, or do we call them spin doctors now? But anyway, about the malleability of political reality compared to how it's meant, how they're trying to project it
I
to
think
the original voter.
interestingly, we don't have the big spin doctor figure the way that we have with Alastair Campbell or Steve
No,
Hilton.
not these days, but
You have
other people
political
have
strategists
similar
and you
problems.
have people who do lots and lots of things, including communication, but there isn't that one singular figure to deal with the media the way there was.
But to go back to Eatanswill, this is one of the spooky things about it. There's Miss this Perker, Slum Key's agent, who is there to present a really positive image of Slum Key to the voters, to the people of the town of Eatanswill.
Getting
And
him to kiss
Dickie
babies.
is trying to get trying to well not yeah to touch babies, to be close to babies. And he and Perker even says, we've got 20 washed men, right? And if you shake their hands and are nice to the babies, people will like it. And Slum Key, you know, as you've pointed out, Emma, is a very upper class. Well, but essentially says, do I have to? You know, he doesn't even want to touch the washed, let alone the unwashed. And the angel says, yes, you know, doesn't say to project this positive image, but that's essentially it. And when Slum Key does shake hands and is nice to the babies, the crowd all cheer. They're totally malleable. They're the, you know, the agent who is who I see as a kind of like, you know, is a spin doctor of, you know, a thick of it figure. There you are in in the 1830s, someone who's malleable, you know, trying to shape the image of the candidate and
Yeah.
working, and it works.
And I think there's a really interesting question to be asked about the balance between the public, the hoi polloi, are all
Yeah.
thick and malleable and they don't know what's
Yes.
good for them. And actually, there is a certain amount, you know, there's a reason advertising works. People are influential. That's not a word, but you know what I mean. Influenceable, I
That's
think.
George W. Bush's word, isn't it?
Oh, God,
It's like
don't.
a Bushism.
A very, yes, me and my, look, I'm a writer, I invent words, it's fine.
Oh, yeah.
And where's the space where you both respect people as not sheep, but also understand that influence is a real thing? And I feel like Dickens, somewhat heavy-handedly, a shock for Dickens, comes down very much on one side of that.
But what he does, and you're absolutely right, yes, it isn't exactly, it's not a subtle portrayal of politics at all. But I think what the thing that you point out about the lack of subtlety in the depiction of voters, they are. I mean, I can tell you, having written a book on the subject, that of all the things that I've seen up to the present day, voters are generally depicted as malleable idiots, as you know, they're self-obsessed themselves. They're almost as bad, if yeah, that as the politicians who are manipulating them. They want to be. It's almost like they want to be manipulated, and that you can see that as a theme, a very strong theme all through political fiction. H.G. Wells, you know, I mean, and up to the present day in terms of TV and what. So that's kind of,
Yeah,
you know,
years and
that's a
years
bit
which we
depressing.
covered. Kind of had a fair bit of that, didn't it? The only
Yeah.
people who were allowed to be good were the ones who weren't being manipulated, and you know they could see the truth. And you know, again, come back to say the Emperor's New Clothes. You know, the wisdom of crowds is the thickness of crowds in awful lot of these situations. And I as someone who spends a lot of time thinking about politics and political communications, yeah, of course, you're there to make the most persuasive argument that you can. But anyone doing that without a real strong sense of respect for the political audience is lost at the first hurdle, frankly.
Yeah.
And I just find the sneery, better than thou approach from my own people as a playwright, you know, just so
That's what I
depressing.
was going to, yeah, I was going to, because I was going to ask you, why? Why do you think that's what they do? Because that is what they do. I mean, I started off liking the thick of it, and then I ended up hating it, because yes, the politicians are all craven, they're all looking after themselves, they're lying, they're confused, they're whatever they are, but then whenever you did see the voters, they were horrible too, they were stupid. I mean, the best you got, and this is something else I showed my students, was the episode of with the piss lady. I think she was in fact called the piss lady. Which was the woman who was obsessed with the fact that she had to clean her own mother's piss because her mother was being, you know, wasn't really properly being looked after in an NHS hospital. And that's a legitimate complaint. But she was turned into this mad, obsessive kind of figure. And there were no, so far as I could see, no positive depictions of the electorate in the thick of it. But there are no positive depictions of the electorate, so far as, you know, generally speaking, in any of these, in any drama or fiction that focuses specifically on electorates. And I'm just thinking, what is the dramatist trying to get the viewer to do in relation to this? Is it to go, like you were saying, oh, well, yeah, well, they're all stupid, but I'm not. Oh, this is terrible. Maybe I'm stupid. Maybe I should do something about it. I mean, what are they trying to do?
So, I think it's a combination of factors in my, I mean, I could write a treatise on this, but in the 1960s, when late 1950s, 1960s, when a lot of the new drama, the new kind of movements were happening, they were shocking. And a lot of the ways that they shocked was in very hostile depictions of authority, and very kind of what would now be described as poverty porn descriptions of working class conditions. And that was shocking. And then they were doing it for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. And the audiences who were going to see, like the audience, if you put on a Joe Orton play now, right? You put it on at the National, say. The people sitting in the seats of the National are not the people being depicted on stage.
No.
But they like to think of themselves as the good people. And theatre audiences skew way left, but liberal left particularly. So when I say left, I don't mean that they've got a class politics. I mean that they think that we should be, an open country and all the things that I believe, because I am a liberal left, but I do at least have, try to have a little bit of class consciousness.
Can I just say, I mean, to just reinforce that point, even outside of the theatre, like the thick of it, I thought everybody knew what the thick of it was. It was only when I started to sort of find out from a book and everything, and no one in my immediate family had ever heard of it, right? It was
Well,
only, I think
and we're
it
named
started on
after it, so
BBC
we're quite
Four.
bad. We're just as
Started on.
bad about being in that bubble. You know, the Zeitgeist
Oh,
tapes was a joke in the thick of it.
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But you, if you know you're in the bubble, then that's good. You know you're in a bubble rather than you think it's. And then I looked more closely at the thick of it audience because it started off on BBC Four, then they moved it to BBC Two, and that was it, right? I mean, in terms of viewers, I mean, if I remember rightly, it was lucky when it if it got 1 million. It was not in the top 20 of BBC Two programs for the weeks in which it was on, maybe once when it started. Dad's Army did far better, right? So the thing is, you're absolutely right. And Armando Iannucci, he's got writes his Guardian stuff. Nobody reads the Guardian. So yeah, I think you think that point I would like to reinforce what you're saying, because it's not just the National Theatre, not just theatre.
And then, of course, the people who fund theatre have also all come through that tradition. So it's a very self-reinforcing world, where they think they're liberal, free, and open to shock. But what would actually be shocking, frankly, is a play espousing the benefits of Brexit, or a play that says, actually, you know what? The free market's brilliant. And really, workers' rights have gone far too far. Because that would, I mean, I wouldn't be into it, but it would be genuinely shocking.
Yes. So, but the
So,
thing is, right? Yes. Sorry.
without sounding like Lawrence Fox or Nigel Farage or some one of those terrible, terrible people, there is a liberal hegemony in the arts cultural world. And while there isn't a liberal hegemony that they think of in lots of other places, what puts bum it, ironically, what drives that liberal hegemony in the arts and cultural world It's economics because it's what puts bums on seats. Theatre goers, particularly at the moment, it's incredibly expensive to go to the theatre, and everyone has a bit less money than they used to. So
Yeah.
you want, why would you want to go and spend your money? And I say the same thing to people about students and student fees. When they say, I don't want to be challenged in this way at university, it's like, well, I could see that when university was free, the university had a right to go, well, okay, but we should make you feel uncomfortable because, that's part of learning. But if you're paying for it,
It
you're a
always makes students
consumer.
feel uncomfortable.
But if you're a consumer, it changes your mindset. And theatre goers
Yeah.
are consumers and they don't want to
Yeah.
be challenged and feel uncomfortable. They want to be
No, well, nobody
reinforced in their
does.
values.
Very few people do, and I'm conscious of it myself. And but when I do watch something which might go against what I might think, then I just feel like I've just, read about an encyclopedia of all kinds of stuff, because it's much, much more insightful. So yeah, so something on a right-wing politician that doesn't present them as completely bastards, just someone who's trying to do something, just happen to believe certain things. But anyway, would be interesting. I'm not sure if there has been anything like that, but I don't think so. But to go back, maybe with a mind to wrapping up on this. So I would say to our listener, if you don't like Dickens, it's short, it's interesting, and I would like to think it will just reinforce what we've said about all these different tropes, which are exactly the ones that you'll be seeing in most, if not all, dramas and fictions about elections. And this is the thing with my book. I didn't do any of the research myself, but audience research shows that if people watch a fiction of a certain sort, they are influenced by it. Maybe not, everyone doesn't all walk out thinking whatever they were meant to think, but it does shape how we think. And
Absolutely.
give it, yeah. And
And
these are
I've always said that
been
I
going
think
on for centuries.
EastEnders or Emmerdale or Coronation Street has far more effect on social liberal attitudes than some of the laws that we've passed. And in fact, they've had an effect on
Yes,
getting things to the
yes.
point where those laws could be passed. Things like gay rights,
So,
so shocking in the
yeah.
80s that there was a gay kiss on EastEnders. And yet, here we are now, several years later, with the actor playing one of those two characters in the House of Lords.
So when you read it, or which maybe you do, you may maybe you will, then you might want to reflect, these are things that were put laid down in the 1830s, because that, as I say, this is like the first time. Maybe Dickens's influence, has been very profound. I mean, are they actually saying something true about elections, or are we being prompted to think of elections in this way because of the way in which our culture has just reinforced the same tropes again and again and again, so that our politicians all act in the way is in the way that they've been kind of cast by dramatists and writers. Now, let's get a bit
It's a
postmodern,
very
that last bit, I
interesting
have to
chicken and
say,
egg,
but
that.
nonetheless,
It's a very interesting chicken and egg. And who knows what the answer is?
absolutely,
Bit of
yes,
both. But yeah,
that's always the
I think.
case. It's always the case, but
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, and I think there is a
So
kernel
anyway.
of truth in these depictions because otherwise they would feel so unreal as to not hit home. So of course there's a kernel of truth in there. It's just that when that's the only presentation that people are exposed to, week in, week out, year in, year out, piece of art after piece of art, be it a novel, be it a painting sometimes. There's a fabulous painting called The Election that me and my dad saw at the John Soane's Museum, which is a fabulous museum. In film, on television. One of the things that I was thinking about before this podcast is one of the few times that I'd seen someone in a soap taking democracy very seriously was the 97, sorry, 87 general election. Lofty Holloway on EastEnders was trying to decide who to vote for, and he sat down and he
Oh, poor
read
Lofty.
all the literature, and then
Yeah.
having done so, because he was Lofty and because EastEnders just loves to kick their Lofty type characters, he then got to the polling station too late to vote.
Yeah,
But he at
that's
least was
just
trying to do his job as a voter. But to the
yeah, but
I've remembered that for, since 1987, and I can't do the maths because I'm tired. But, that stood out because it was a rare depiction of someone taking politics seriously in a soap.
yes, although subsequently in Coronation Street, and we should end on this very important point, Curly Watts stood as an independent for Wetherfield Council, taking on the corrupt political establishment as,
They've
you know,
all had
one man
councillors.
campaign.
Sally, I think,
Yes,
was actually depicted as a Tory councillor, I think. She had a blue rosette at the
I've
very
stopped
least.
watching it by then. Yes,
Nicola,
yeah,
the
yes.
fabulous, fabulous Nicola King, is a councillor in Emmerdale. We're not sure who for. And she won her seat after contesting against David, who won his seat after contesting it against his father, who was corrupt. Which
And
means that
on
the
that,
Hotton
bombshell.
District Council has been overrepresented by the small village of Emmerdale.
Right. So that's an important point that we should end on, I think. And so it behooves me to thank Emma for
Thank
contributing
you.
to the discussion, which I've been hosting. And as I've been hosting it, I've got to indicate that this is a political human production. To thank Lord Stuart Wood for providing the theme tune and asking our listener to rate and review this on whatever flipping platform you may listen to us on.
Till next time, don't forget to vote.